Testing, this is Stephen Vaughn. It's August 5th, 1997. We're in Byless Hall at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and this is an oral history. Scott, maybe we could start off, and you could talk a little bit about your early life, where you were born, your family, where you went to school.
I was born in Buchanan, West Virginia, in a small college now of about 4,000, home of West Virginia Wesleyan College. I was born July 15, 1915. And my mother had eloped at the age of 16 to escape a dreadful stepmother and married my father in 1914. I was born in 1915. My father went into World War I, 1917. When he came back, he and my mother separated. Oh, and he got a divorce in 1923. Because my mother couldn't go to her father's home because of the stepmother, we went to live with the great-grandmother and a great-aunt, great-uncle, brother and sister, on a 640-acre farm. The outskirts of Buchanan, and I grew up on this farm. And I had the loving care of the great-grandmother, who was born in the Andy Jackson administration, who taught me to read and write and do numbers before I went to school. Consequently, I was well ahead of most of my classmates when I started school in Buchanan. She was a fervent believer in education.
What was her name?
Sarah Elizabeth Carper Reger, R-E-G-E-R. She so believed in education, she insisted this 640-acre farm be in the Buchanan Independent School District, so I didn't have to go to a country school. And so I went to Buchanan schools. All my playmates were in Buchanan. So I had the advantages of living in town and also living on the farm. And my great uncle George, about whom I've written a memoir, was the most wonderful man I have ever known. He took on the job of being my father when he was almost 60. And no child ever had a wiser, more tolerant, more loving father than I had in Uncle George. And even though he'd gone only about 3 terms of winter school, he was a self-educated man, read widely, and preached education, preached books, and kept me, well, he read to me when I was small, and then he kept buying books. So the last thing he wanted was for me to work on the farm, because it's brute labor in his day. And so both my great-grandmother and my Uncle George and Aunt Tell all preached the importance of education. So then, of course, he was hurt, as was my grandfather, by the Depression. And at 17, he gave up the home farm, moved to one out on Bridge Run, and I moved into my grandfather's house, reluctantly, because of the step-grandmother. And my whole career, Steve, was shaped with the fact I worked on the high school newspaper, and the principal of the high school had asked me to write up football and basketball games for the local paper. Well, by 1933, we were fat-ass broke, all of us. I got a job on the Buchanan Record at $5 a week, and that has shaped my life. One thing led to another. Well, by working on the record, I was able to, with some loans from a Methodist loan fund, go to Wesleyan College for 2 years. Then I...
Now this would have been about 1934?
I went 32 to 34.
32 to 34, 1934.
Well then in May of 35, Roswell Reed, who taught me much of the journalism I know, he was general manager of the West Virginia newspapers headquartered in Morgantown, West Virginia. And he provided me tutelage all the time I was working on the record. He owned the record. And each week he would send me the issue of the record marked with blue pencil. And he taught me, in effect, journalism. But May of 35, he thought I was ready for the daily paper. So I moved to Morgantown and worked on first the Morgantown Dominion News, then the Morgantown Post. Well, an editor I'd worked for in Buchanan, Frank Hutchison, because his paper had come up on hard times. This was a depression. Syracuse University started a journalism school in 1934. And Frank Hutchison had a friend, Seward Reese, on the faculty at Syracuse. And Seward Reese got M. Lyle Spencer, the new dean of the School of Journalism at Syracuse, to hire Hutch. Well, in 30, Hutchison's father was a retired Methodist minister in 36, living in Morgantown. In 36, Hutch came down, came to see me. That, but then I was working on the Post, the afternoon newspaper. And he said, Scott, look, you're too bright to not finish your education. And I've worked out a deal for you. He said, you can have a job in the Publicity Bureau at Syracuse, $50 a month in tuition, if you'll come to Syracuse, finish your education. And obviously, this was, you know, they talk about self-made men. So many men played such an influential role in my life. Frank Hutchison did too. So I went to Syracuse and I worked in the Bureau of Public Information.
Could I just, before we get into Syracuse, you mentioned back in high school, you wrote for the...
School life.
Were there people there who were influential that you remember being...
I'm glad you brought that up. That goes back to the fourth grade. I had my greatest teacher was a young woman at that time of 19, teaching her first time in fourth grade in the academy school. She told me I could write.
Remember her name?
Yes, Gazelle Rust. We stayed in close touch until she became senile about 5 years ago and died 4 years ago. She lived to be in her 90s. And we corresponded, we visited. In fact, it was Gazelle Russ first I had her in fourth grade. Then I'd been double promoted one time. So to make up, to get myself even before I started junior high, I went to summer school to Gazelle Russ. There were six of us. She taught summer school. Then I had her again in seventh grade. Then, in ninth grade, I entered the junior high oratorical contest. And she coached me for that free. And she was coaching another friend of mine for the dramatic reading. We weren't getting paid for her, but she coached me for... She was such a wonderful person. And she gave me encouragement all the way. And
the high school, my mother was a high school teacher,
yeah.
And I can remember she taught in a one-room schoolhouse at one time, and I can remember sitting in on a class in there. But this was the high school was considerably bigger. This was divided by grades or
oh, yeah.
So
yeah. We had junior high and high school. And I won the junior high oratorical contest, and as a sophomore, I entered the high school's oratorical contest, and because I was so cocky, I lost it. I didn't work as hard that time. Anyway, I've worked on school life, and as I say, the principal, Ross Borner, asked me if I wouldn't write up the game. Of course, I played high school football. I was out for football 4 years, starting ninth grade, but I was played regularly as a guard my junior year and center my senior year. I was never beyond the B squad basketball. But it was a small high school. We had about 60 in our graduating class. So it was a great advantage. And, but anyway, so I just grabbed it. See, I go from I get the only job I can get in town, $5 a week. A reporter for the Red and Black was interviewing me when I retired as dean at Georgia. And I told him this story, told her this story. She said, $5 a week? I said, I bought 25 loaves of bread, 25 pounds of hamburger. And that helped. But I soon got a raise at $7.50, and then before I left, I was making $15. Then I had a wonderful break before that. I got my baptism in public relations in the spring of 36. Ernest Bailey, who had been state road commissioner, had fallen out with the governor, was running as a candidate for governor, Democratic nomination for governor of West Virginia. And he called me and asked me to meet him at Middleburn over on the Ohio River. And this was in February of 36. And he asked me if I would be his press secretary for the campaign. And I eagerly accepted, getting permission from Mr. Reed. And that was the most intense 12 weeks of my life. It was a great learning experience, a disappointing one, because he lost, ran third in a field of four. But I was his chauffeur, and press representative, and handyman.
So this involved handling his publicity,
yes.
Press releases.
Yes.
Now, had you had any kind of... Now, 36, were you at Syracuse in
36? No. This was the spring of 36.
So what year did you go to Syracuse?
Fall of 36.
Fall of 36. So had you done any... did you have any interest in public relations?
No.
Or so this
no.
is just something of
no.
on-the-job training?
No, my job was to get out a press release every day out of the same speech. It's not easy to do. But it was a great experience, and again, Mr. Bailey was one of the great influences in my life. Just a marvelous man. You'll come back to him. You see how all his threads together. So, having known Frank Hutchison, Buckhannon, got me to Syracuse. Well, in 37, Fred Merwin, who incidentally was Crawford Young's uncle, Fred Merwin had finished his PhD here with John Goss. He was single. He came to Syracuse. And we became not only a teacher-student, but buddies. Drinking buddies. Well, Fred insisted that I come here and get a PhD under John Goss. And my first visit to Madison was in November of 38 when I came here at the Sigma Delta Chi Convention. I was president of the Sigma Delta Chi chapter at Syracuse. And Fred had arranged for me to have an interview with Hyde. Grant Hyde.
Grant Hyde was director.
Yes, he was director. And he offered me a fellowship based on Fred's recommendation. Offered me a teaching assistantship of $750. But I had also applied at Northwestern. Ken Olson. Ken offered me $600 assistantship. So I chose Wisconsin because of $150 and John Goss. greatest decision I ever made. One of them. I once made the mistake of saying that Georgia, coming to Georgia was the greatest decision I ever made. After my wife asked me if it really was my greatest decision. So I'm careful how I say that.
Well, if you'd gone to Northwestern, you would have what? How do you think you would have gone off in a different?
Well, my whole life has been totally different. And, you know, all our lives hang a very slender thread. Honestly, 1961, when Ken Olson retired, Northwestern faculty, Bill Cole offered me that slot. Why didn't I take it? Well, very simple. They were not teaching public relations at that time. And so he said, Scott, I want you to take over Ken Olson's editing course. Of course, I taught editing here for 29 years. And I also want to teach public relations. I said, Bill, have you asked the faculty about public relations? He said, no, I don't have to. I said, well, I'm not coming here under those circumstances. So, in fact, I never thought I would leave Wisconsin. But anyway, come back to Syracuse. I graduated there cum laude. 1939. I got my degree from the Maxwell School of Public Affairs and the School of Journalism. I carried a double major. Double major in the only two schools requiring comprehensive exams to finish. Maxwell School required a 4-hour exam and School of Journalism required an 8-hour comprehensive exam.
These are exams on everything that you'd had. Did they require any kind of a senior thesis or writing when you were there?
No.
They did. Okay.
So I graduated, and you know, as Robert Frost says, life is roads taken or not taken. Well, the man I had worked for in the news bureau, Leslie Nichols, to back up, 37, M. Lyle Spencer, former president of the University of Washington, by the way, had gone to Cairo to organize the School of Journalism in the American University. Well, then in 38, he sent Les Nichols, who had been my boss in the Bureau of Public Information, over to staff the school and run it. Well, when I graduated in 39, Les Nichols, was bombarding me with urging me to come to Cairo to offering a stipend of $1,100 a year, and one of the inducements was scotch was only $2.50 a bottle. I was drinking scotch in those days, unfaithful to my West Virginia heritage. And Fred Warren insisted I come to Wisconsin. I took his advice, which I have never regretted.
Now, Nichols was head of the press bureau at...
At Syracuse, yes.
He was head of the press bureau at Syracuse.
It was called the Bureau of Public Information, which was a lousy name, because we were constantly getting calls for information.
Well, this is similar to the kind of thing that Blyer set up here.
Okay. So I came here as graduate school in September of 39, and a whole new world opened up to me. My intellectual awakening really started here in 39. With teachers like Sally Perlman, Edwin Whitty, John Goss, to be honest, the school of journalism at that time was not strong.
When you mention these people, could you say a little bit about what they taught?
Well, Sally Perlman was famous for his book, The Theory of the American Labor Movement. He was a Russian refugee and internationally known for his labor history. And Edwin Witte was in economics, taught state government. He wrote the Social Security Act. He was chairman of the committee, wrote the Social Security Act. John Goss, of course, was the nation's leading scholar in public administration. And he had hired Frederick Ogg, who was former chairman of the history department, political science department, and hired my wife in 43 as secretary of political science. And when I came back to teach in January of 46, John Goss introduced us, and we only married the next year and had a wonderful 50-year marriage. But I had a wonderful 2 years stimulation here. Well, by 41...
Let's see, you were here 39 to 41.
I earned 40 graduate credits.
In 2 years.
Yep.
What were some of the courses you took when you were here? Do you remember?
Well, I took...
In addition to the people you already mentioned.
Well, I... Steve, some of this is so funny now. I had Frank Thayer seminar in old newspaper files. I think that was the title.
Now, how did he run that course? What did he teach?
We each had to do a paper on a newspaper.
Okay.
On its history and its evolution. And
one of the things I noticed, you know, over here in the equipment room, we've got a lot of senior theses that were written going back in Blyer's time. And a lot of them deal with individual newspapers,
yeah.
It seems to me. And I guess that's kind of a tradition to look at.
But I did my thesis under Goss. I did a study of the cooperative extension.
This is a master's.
Yes.
Now, Goss, was he in journalism?
Or no.
He was in public administration, right?
Political science.
Political science, okay.
Goss had the theory 1939 that our federal government will eventually merge into a series of institutions involving federal government, the state government, and local government. And he sold cooperative extension as a pattern for the future. Well, it didn't materialize quite the way he thought it would. But that's why he had me do the history of the cooperative extension. And
say a little more about what that means, cooperative extension.
Well, it was created in 1914 in the Wilson administration. It's a land-grant college system. If the Department of Agriculture reaches out to land-grant colleges, who reach down to the county agents and the home agents and the 4-H club agents. It's a whole network whose time is gone, but it lives on. That was to encourage farmers to farm better and farm wives to can and do more and better. I had some help. I was then dating the daughter of the National Director of Extension, serving under Henry Wallace. I had some help. That isn't why I did the thesis.
Did you know, I don't guess you ever met Henry Wallace, did you?
No. But he was a friend of the Wilson family. And Mr. Wilson held me, became Under Secretary of Agriculture. So, but by 41, I had received the draft number, 01.
Excuse me, 41, you'd gotten your master's.
Right? June of 41.
And this was in political science?
Yes.
Okay. Not journalism.
Well, in journalism. I got it in journalism, but I actually did my thesis under Goss.
In political science. Now, was that common at the time in journalism?
No.
The master's at that time was usually done in the school of journalism.
That's right.
Yeah.
But
how did they allow you to do a political science?
Grant Hyde was very graceful and very cooperative, very encouraging in everything I did. He was a very sweet person, really. Not a strong person, but a sweet person.
So, I'm wondering, before we get to 41, which is the war, maybe you could say a little more about people like Grant Hyde and the school in general. What were your impressions of it were when you encountered it? And, you know, just in general, what the environment was like.
Well, let me go back, tell you what I know about the history of the school. And what I know, the early history, I learned from Ralph Napster. I met Ralph Napster at my first AHA convention in Columbus, Ohio, December of 46, after I'd come back to teach. And Ralph met me and immediately took a special interest in me, why I never knew. And he wanted to know about the school. He was concerned about its decline.
About Wisconsin?
Yes.
He was in Minnesota.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I'll get to that. And so he suggested we ride together on the train from Columbus to Chicago. And he went on to Minneapolis, and I went to Madison. And all the way, he preached to me the importance of finishing my PhD. In fact, in 47, he called me with an offer of a lectureship in Minnesota so I could finish. But two things had happened. One, I had gone into President Fred's office as his assistant for public relations. Two, my wife was pregnant. And her clock was running out, so I never went to Minnesota to finish my degree. Well, let me finish 41, and I'll come back. In December, I got my draft notes, low number. Two, I had accumulated quite a few bills for my education. Steve, I grew up dirt poor in the Depression in terms of money, but rich in terms of family influence. And I need to pay off the debts before I went into service. And Mr. Bailey had returned to public office in January of 41 when Senator Matthew Neely was elected governor. He gave up the chairmanship of the Senate Judiciary Committee to become governor of West Virginia to save his political hide, really. And Mr. Bailey called me and said he wanted me to come in June and organize a full-fledged PR department for the State Road Commissioner. And in the meantime, he said the governor was thinking of a centralized public relations agency for this whole government, state government. Well, fortunately, in my studies here, I learned that Phil LaFollette had tried that. A man by the name of Curtis Ford, and the press had, they were already suspicious of his quote-unquote fascistic leaning here. And said, you know, derided as the propaganda bureau. And the thing died of boring. Well, so I graduated, got my master's. I didn't stay for a minute, but I went back to Charleston, West Virginia. And from June of 41 until May 42, when I went in the service, and that's a whole story in itself. I built a strong, I'd taken a half-time PR job, built into a strong public relations agency for the road commission. This was encouraged by Governor Neely, who had been influenced by his friendship with Huey Long in the Senate. Huey Long had sold Governor Neely on the importance of publicity. So my job was easy. Well, to back up,
The road commission. Your job there was what, to convince people that you needed a better network of roads.
That's
and,
right.
And transportation.
You know, it's amazing. As I used to tell my classes, resistance to change is the strongest law of human nature. My first big PR job was to persuade the people of Bexley, West Virginia, that it was their interest to have a bypass.